Okay, welcome to ReachMahjong.com's May? No, July, June.
This is May.
This is May.
Yeah, it's a little bit late this month. May 28th, 2008.
ReachMahjong.com's podcast, June, May sort of podcast.
We'll have another one in June, so this counts as May, I'm pretty sure.
That's what I meant. with you, your hosts, Garth Nelson and...
Jen Barr.
In case you want to reach us, you can find us on our website, ReachMahjong.com. Our email addresses are garth@reachmahjong.com. That's garthe@reachmahjong.com. And yours is?
Is jen@reachmahjong.com. jen@reachmahjong.com. reachmahjong.com.
Good point, because some people spell reach Japanesely, don't they?
Yeah.
All right, let's head right into Mahjong news, stuff that has happened recently. There's a lot of World Series of Mahjong stuff.
Well, they had the official press release on April 17th, a press conference, actually, in Macau, and they had a lot of the Chinese stars over there. They announced also that we will have an official World Series of Mahjong Reach Mahjong event on September 18th, day before the main event. And ReachMahjong.com is going to sponsor that and administer. We have a tournament committee led by Shintaro Kono from the Japan Professional Mahjong League. He is the rules director, and he's going to lead the tournament committee along with, along with the tournament director, who is Yoshino-san, Mr. Yoshino. And also, our Reach Mahjong representative should be Andy Barzagi, who you all know at yakitori.com.
Yes.
So those three, they're going to be in charge of the tournament. They're going to run it, and they've come up with all the rules. And we have the rules, the official rule set in English and Japanese, which we will put on the website very soon. Waiting for Andy to do that. Please, Andy.
Yes. Time to get to work.
Please.
I can hardly be telling people to get to work.
Also, it looks like ReachMahjong.com is we're trying to hold study sessions twice a week in Tokyo. So if you're in the area, then come, and we're working on a free roll tournament sometime in August.
Right.
Which will be announced soon once everything gets figured out. But right. If you're in the area, come join us.
And these study sessions are, of course, not only just for the World Series rules. We will be practicing the reach rules also.
Right, because the tournament format is a little bit different than what some people are used to.
Right.
Because it's a one-day tournament, so we will be practicing both rules on demand.
Yes.
I'm pretty sure.
But, in general, people in Tokyo have pretty good handle on reach rules, so we will be focusing on the World Series rules, right? And very excited to be having the Reach event at the World Series of Mahjong, real, honest-to-goodness World Series.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, and the Reach event, the buy-in is going to be $1,000, so it's the first high-stakes cash tournament for Reach Mahjong in the world.
And, in fact, a lot of the a much larger percentage of the entry fees is going back to the players in the form of cash prizes.
Right. We don't have a guaranteed prize pool, but we do have a minimum requirement of 20 entrants.
Right.
And so the minimum prize pool will be just under $20,000.
Right.
More than 80% will go back. 5,000 of it will be used for the seat in the main event. For the winner, but if the winner has already registered in the main event, then they can get a refund or use it for next year's event as well.
Right.
Yeah.
So it's a quite a bit, I don't know, to use the Japanese, but it's a much more delicious tournament than than a lot of the tournaments that people have gotten used to participating in Japan.
Yes.
You know, that considering the amount of money that goes into the prize pool in, it doesn't go into the prize pool. It goes into the,
the
money for us pool. And sure would be nice to be one of us, wouldn't it?
Also, we will we'll be paying out the, or not we, because we're you and I will be playing. So we are not administering the tournament. Our website is administering, but Garth and I are going to be featured players, and the tournament committee is going to be running it. So Garth and I are not running the tournament. We are available for advice to the committee if they ask, as a player kind of consultant. Term, but we won't be getting anything from the tournament unless we win.
Yes.
Also,
which would be cool, yes.
The top 10 to 15% of players will get paid out. So that is pretty oishi. Yeah. That is pretty delicious as well. Usually just the final table gets paid in most of the Japanese tournaments. And if there's only 20 entrants, only the final table will get paid. But if there are more, you know, if there's 100, then at least 10 people, maybe 15, will get paid and things like that. So...
Yes, so we're looking forward to having a tournament a little bit more in the style of, say, poker tournaments, where you know, you can actually win a little bit.
Yeah.
More than you can win a little bit more than just pride of having won the tournament. a little return on your investment there.
Also, yeah.
Let's see.
That's
so
for World Series.
Yeah, that's World Series news. Yeah.
Yeah, we have one more international tournament news item.
Oh, right. That's right. The European Open Reach Championships are coming up, right?
Yeah, it's called Reach, the European Open, I think.
Okay.
And that's coming up next month in June. So we're planning on taking the trip over to Germany to play in that.
Yes, I'm excited to see how we match up against the Europeans.
And our teacher, Mr. Moriyama, is coming as well. That's pretty exciting.
Yeah, it's a pretty big name in Mahjong. And, you know, speaking of tournaments, don't want to jump away from the European tournament so soon, but...
just wanted to mention one thing.
Okay.
That's why I brought it up. No, I brought up the European tournament for a reason.
Oh, right.
So I wanted to mention that reachmahjong.com has... we are printing T-shirts right now. So as long as the order and the shipping, everything is good with that, everyone who plays in the European tournament will get a T-shirt. Courtesy reachmahjong.com. So, waiting for the shipping and everything. They haven't arrived yet, but we have placed the order. So, they don't arrive. I'm sorry, but should be just fine.
Yes. Exciting. And then going on to Masters, other Mahjong news. Last month, we had the Mahjong Masters Tournament, sponsored by the Japan Professional Poker... and Professional Mahjong League,
Yes.
And speaking of Mr. Moriyama, he made it to the final table, huh?
Yes, he did.
Wow.
He got, I think he ended up getting fourth place, but he made it to the final table. An interesting story from Masters is our friend Naito, who we have played a lot of private games with.
Uh-huh.
He's not a pro or anything. He went to the same tournament that Andy did, and I think we mentioned last month. We talked about Andy playing, and we talked about our friend Naito making it to the big show, and he actually made it to the top eight.
Wow, way to go, Naito!
All the way from the very
and not even
first...
starting like where we started, and not starting where most of the players started who did make it to that final eight. He started at the very bottom, and worked his way all the way up. So. Congratulations to Naito for at least making it as far as he did and doing it in much more impressive style than most of the players who made it that far.
Yeah, he did. He really did awesome. I remember seeing him at the day of the tournament, and you know, he's just having a good time. He's always having a good time when he's playing
the other
Mahjong.
Thing I love about that guy.
He's great.
He is just having a good time when he's playing Mahjong. He's getting drunk half the time and just having fun winning because, man, that guy is good.
Yeah, and the interesting story, the guy who won, actually, his name is Sarukawa.
Uh-huh.
He's a young guy. He's one of the young guns. I'm actually not sure what league he's in. We'll have to check that for the next podcast. Uh-huh. But Sarukawa, I guess he was in the finals at Oi-sen as well, at Oi... The OUI tournament.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
he made it to the final table.
I'm pretty sure. And then this time...
He's in B1.
He's in B1.
Yeah.
Okay, so way up there. He was down after the third game. There's six games of the final table, I think.
Uh-huh.
After the third game, he was down 100 points. He was negative 100 points in last place.
How many games do they play on the final table?
I think they played six.
Wow, so halfway through, he's down 100 points.
Yeah.
You're pretty much down and out at that point, right?
Yeah.
You think, all right, game over.
Yeah, and I just read the interview about him on the Japan Professional Mahjong League site, which I think the interview just went up last week or something.
Uh-huh.
And the guy who wrote it, he said, and when they said that after the third game, Sarukawa looked back at me and he said, "Don't worry, I'm going to win the next three." And he did.
Wow.
He did, and he came back from way behind.
Yeah, not only did he have to win the next three, he had to win them in pretty huge form,
Wow. Well, the thing about Masters is there is a 30-point bonus for first place.
That's right. So And of course, the 30-point minus for last place.
Right.
So it'll make your minuses pretty big, but it does make it possible to come back from a big deficit, which makes it a little bit more exciting than A rules, where once you're down that much, you almost certainly are out.
Yes.
Although, going to the other tournament that at least started last month, Jiudansen, also known as the 10 Steps or 10 Tiers tournaments,
right.
Tournament. This is a tournament where each ranking, everybody who's at a certain rank starts the tournament at that rank in the tournament. So we are all first ranking players. So of course we had to start at the very bottom. And both of us made it to the next rank, right?
Yeah, to the second round.
We made it
won a Sambaimon hand, so.
Very nice.
That is 24,000 points, because I was not dealer.
And so, yes, we went on to the, with our successes there, we went on to the second tier. And, the second tier for me, I was killing them after three games. Like, I had plus 60 points, and the next two guys were, like, plus 7 and plus 5. And then my turn as dealer, Jerkoff gets Stu Uncle, four concealed triples. So, of course, I have to pay 16,000 points there. And then after his Oyaban, after his turn as dealer, the last dealer just kept winning and winning and winning and would not stop winning. And they actually overtook me. It was pretty amazing. From 50 points down. So similar to the guy there. And that's even in A rules. They overcame a 50-point deficit in one game.
Yeah, there was no overturning for me.
Yeah.
I did not overturn anybody in Jiudani.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
So we can't give you too much of the results there because this month all that's happened in the 10 tiers tournament is the first four tiers. They play up to the fourth level. And so then next month the winners from that tournament will go to the fifth level.
Yeah, and that's going to happen at the same time as
yes.
The European tournament.
That is happening at the same time as the European Reach Championships, which is why we didn't really care at all about the whole tournament. I mean, we were trying to lose, of course. I mean, obviously, if we'd really wanted to win. Obviously, if I had wanted to win that last game, I would have played a little differently.
Yeah, definitely.
I mean, it goes without saying, right?
Of course. I was trying to lose on purpose.
Yes. I had to drink the next day, too. Lots of partying to do. German festival. Yeah. Okay, so those are the tournaments that were going on last month and this month. What other standings to update, just everybody's position in the league. In A1, Mochizuki has taken the lead with a big performance in the second box?
Second session,
yes. I had plus 82 to...
It is a box there on the paper,
on the table. It looks like a box. So he is in first place with plus 83. Right behind him is Maihara with 68. And Arasan, who was first after the first session, he had a barely positive day, but he's still in a comfortable third place. It's interesting. The rest of the field is that there are only four players plus at this point out of the 12 players in A1. And the rest of the field is pretty close, within, say, 20 points of each other, 20, 30 points of each other, except for Nihira is a little bit farther down. And then what is it? Seto Guma-san, yes.
One of the most important people in the Japan Professional Mahjong League.
Somebody whose name I should know. Hopefully he's not listening yet. Mr. Seto Guma has had two rather down sessions to be leading the pack at the bottom, or bringing up the bottom of the pack at minus 73. That's A1 league. Then in A2, Sawazaki continues to lead, or not continues, he had a big day to overtake Ito-san. He has plus 88 to be leading A2. Farther down in A2, we have other names that we like to watch. Takizawa. He had a small minus to go a little bit under. And it's interesting to me, for the success that he has in Oisen, which is the same rules, he never does anything really spectacular in league.
Hmm. Well, he did already get to A2.
All right, he did get to A2. But it's funny how I don't know. Nothing major happens. Yeah. He never loses much either, but he never wins either. And you'd think, I don't know.
Maybe he doesn't drink enough the night before.
That's right. That's how he won away the time before.
Yeah, he said that he was out drinking.
Got hammered and just came along and won.
So maybe he just needs to have a good party. Yeah. Maybe every Friday night league, he should have a party.
I'm going to start trying that, actually. What have I been thinking all this time? Like I needed an excuse. And then bringing up the rear in A2, we have Ohashi, also known as Dump on Fight Club. He had a pretty awful first day, and his second day wasn't much better. So he's got minus 172. It looks like he's got a lock on heading down to B2 or B1 there.
I played with him at Champions League, and he was losing a lot.
Yeah, once you get into one of those funks, it is really hard to pull yourself out. Yeah. You're just in a losing mode, and you don't really know what to do. Like, what am I doing wrong? Everything I do is wrong.
You just look at the tiles as they're dealt out to you, and you're just like, what am I supposed to do with this?
Yeah.
What do these mean?
Sure, he's trying to figure out what is wrong with his mahjong at the moment. Some other names that we like to watch in B1, Nikaido Aki is playing quite strongly. She had just about as strong a second day as she did first day. So she leads the pack with plus 89. A little farther down below her is Nikaido Rumi, who also had, she had a good strong first day, but her second day was a little down. But she's also still positive, and there are only six players positive in B1. But a little exciting, I haven't checked the records on this, but I don't think there has been a woman above B1 so far.
Yeah, I remember there was, when Aki was in B1 before, she moved down to B2 once, but when we started, she was in B1.
And she would have been the first girl to move, or first woman to move up into A2.
There was one other girl in B1 with her at the time.
Oh, okay.
And that girl ended up quitting and going to JMO.
I see. So then, a little exciting here, Aki could be the first woman to ever move up into A2.
Into the A-League. She could be A-Leaguer.
And she is kind of dominating the field right now. And three players will go up from B1 to A2. And she's got a pretty good lead on fourth place, at least, which is Kuroki-san, actually. And so a little excited to see what she does with her lead here.
That'd be awesome if Aki moved up to.
Yes.
She is just so good.
Yeah. She is a strong
really
player.
Is good.
And she just seems to be getting stronger also.
Yeah.
She's an already strong player that is still improving her game, which is what you like to see from strong players.
Yeah.
People who are still learning. another strong player that we like to watch, although it's, I don't know if I like to root for him so much, but Mr. Iwai Kenta has had two kind of rough down days, so he's bringing up almost the bottom of B1 with a minus 73. And another one of those names that, man, I cannot root for, but he sure is successful. He's Sato Sasaki. He's had two sort of just average days to hold his position at sixth place. He's got plus 16 points in B2.
Like, one of the funny things about, it's kind of a little bit off subject, but, Hisato.
Right.
You know, we always want to say Sasaki because everybody's called by their last names here, right?
Right.
But Sasaki, it's like Ichiro. You know Ichiro, the player for the Mariners?
Yeah.
You know, his name is Suzuki. And Suzuki is just such a common name.
Right.
That they call him Ichiro, even though Ichiro is like a very generic first name. It's still not very common, right now. I mean, it's very generic. It just means first son, but it's not a very common first name.
Right.
So they call him Ichiro instead of Suzuki to distinguish him
from all
other
the rest
Suzukis.
Of the Suzukis.
And Sasaki's the same way. Whenever I say Sasaki to one of the people in JPML, they're like, Hisato? Oh, yes, Hisato.
Oh, how funny. I didn't realize that was such an established nickname for him.
And another like just little note, Nikaido sisters, they're always called Rumiaki. It's like Rumiaki is one organism.
It's become one identity between
like,
the two of them.
What about Rumiaki? Is Rumiaki coming?
Wow, they're singular.
Yeah.
Wow. Interesting. Let's see. Moving down into the lower leagues in C1, Kurosawa Saki is in 12th place in C1. C2, Yuki Michi, she's the current pro queen?
No, not the pro queen. She won the very first women's league.
Oh, women's league, okay.
So that was last year, not this year.
Okay.
And I think this year, didn't Aki win it?
Oh, that's right. And, I'm behind the times. But
yeah, but Michi Yuki's interview is on our website.
Yes, another strong woman who is continuing to improve. She has had two strong first days, and so she is currently in third place in the C2 league. Let's see, moving down to C3, we have our buddy Kamimura Shintaro. He had an okay first day and kind of just an average second day, but he's in 11th place in the C3 league out of 37 players. Also in, Fight Club, we have Izumi. She had a pretty rough first day, but has kind of pulled it together on the second day for at least a positive score, so she's in 24th. She looks like she'll be at least holding her position in C3. She might probably prevent herself from moving down. And then, of course, the league that everybody's watching, D1. At the very top, or not quite at the very top of D1, but close, is Oba. He was the winner of D2 last session, and our hero for having made it in the 10 tiers tournament last year, all the way to the final table, starting, of course, at the first tier. That is quite an accomplishment. And you have to think the guy is a pretty strong player. He's tearing it up in D1 again.
He also did really good in Masters this year. I can't remember how far he went, but he went really far, like top 16.
You're saying that, he was in the top 16. He did have, I think he may have donked out already in 10. Oh, no, he hasn't.
He doesn't come in yet.
That's right. He's seated in 10 tiers. What I'm thinking of is
the special league that we're playing in. Yeah, he's just below me a little bit.
Yeah, he had a couple rough sessions there. So
because on our the last game, I was on the same table as him at the special league last time. In our last game, the dealer went ahead and just the very last dealer of the very last game went ahead and won four concealed triples off me. In like the fourth or fifth discard.
Which is extremely rare, right? Yeah. I mean, four concealed triples, in general, you're going to have to draw that last triple to complete your hand. And so it'll almost always be a self-drawn hand.
Yeah.
And to end up throwing that hand is just really, really bad luck.
Thank you.
It doesn't get much worse than that.
So and she I mean, have seven waiting for the six and right. seven. So the seven's going to give her the four concealed
And you know,
triples. Even
and a weight like that is, it's kind of a good weight because it's a weight on the other side of a wall. But you know, there's always the chance also that somebody might throw the six and then the seven comes out and she's in a missed win, right?
talk
about the luck. that was kind of a rough loss for one of
and
our
right
heroes.
After right after that Oba threw the
oh right then he threw another gigantic
he threw
wonder,
like
too.
A 18,000 point hand to right. her so that just yes. solidified his negative as well,
right? But he is tearing it up at the top of D1, so it looks like he won't need the league to move up. He'll just move up one league anyway. Also in D1 with us is Tamura Rinka. She had a sort of big down day to finish at minus 14 in the standings. And, of course, your intrepid reporters, Garth and Jen, we are almost neck and neck at minus 36 and minus 45 after I had a sort of okay up day and Jen had a kind of weak, kind of rough down day, huh? So yes, we're looking to both improve our standings in the next league session to at least get back to positive.
Yeah.
If not, somehow storm up to the top of the group and burst our way into C3. And that wraps up the leagues. Cause
oh,
of course,
one more. What about our rules director Kondo?
Oh yes, Kondo. Excuse me. Yes, he is in A2. Yes.
I think he's in B1.
Oh yeah, that's what I meant. Kondo, where is he in the standing?
Dark blue, San.
Mr. Dark Blue is Komo Shintaro, is in 7th. He had a good plus day. Had a good plus day on the second in the second session to just barely get shy of 0. He is minus 0.07 at this point. So,
0.7.
We don't score in the hundreds in our league anyway. So, yes, it looks like he will. He's got himself close to positive. Probably won't be moving down, and maybe has a shot at getting himself into the top three to move up. Or in the top two, actually, it has to be to move up out of B1 into A2. So that wraps up the leagues. Let's shoot into our topic for this month. Should you pon chi kan? Should you steal? Should you call? Should you naku? Should you cry?
Take other people's tiles.
However you want to call it. Should you take other people's tiles? Should you open your hand? Or should you try to keep your hand concealed? So let's see. What are some of the situations where you'd say it's okay to open your hand? Why would you consider opening your hand?
Well, first of all, I would say if you're not sure, I would just not do it.
That is great advice, actually. Yeah, if there's any reason, if you don't have a really compelling reason, then you should just keep it closed.
Yeah, because if you're not sure about the hand and you're not very confident about it, then you're gonna just end up calling tiles. You're going to be left with a few tiles in your hand, and you're more than likely, if you don't have a good plan, you're more than likely going to throw someone else's winner.
Right.
So if you're not sure and you're not confident, I would say just keep it closed. And also, invisibility is a huge defense. So if you're calling and showing parts of your hand, that's going to be, that's going to make your hand weaker just by other people being able to read your hand.
It really tips people off as to what kind of things you're aiming for, what stuff is probably still in your hand. And like you say, it just limits your options once you need to start playing defense.
Right.
Because half your tiles are already on the table.
Right. So let's just make that the number one rule, I guess.
Number one rule, yes.
If you're not sure.
If you don't have a really good reason, if you can't think of a good reason to start stealing tiles, keep it closed.
Yeah.
All right. First rule. okay. So let's see. What is a situation that's... You have a hand where... I'm trying to think of a good example. why would you let yourself chow a middle group of tiles?
Okay, well, when you're looking at your hand, I would say one of the first things you want to look at when you think about if this is going to be an open hand or a closed hand is how many lucky tiles, how many dora do you have?
Okay.
Because the more dora you have, the more it's going to make sense to look for a plan where you have more flexibility and you can use other people's discards.
Okay.
Because, there's certain hands like the peace hand, pinfu, and stuff that you're not allowed to open your hand.
Right.
So if you have, two or three dora, two or three lucky tiles in your hand, you want to start looking at your value tiles. Maybe, if you can pawn something there. Or you want to start looking at an inside hand, I think. All simples.
It's true. If I have a lot of lucky tiles in my hand, then it certainly increases my desire to win that hand, right? If it's just a hand with no hand points and no lucky tiles, then, it's not... I don't really feel like I don't feel compelled to try to win that hand.
Right.
But if you have a bunch of lucky tiles, you're thinking to yourself, wow, I've got to find a way to win. And if that way happens to be stealing tiles, then that's the way to go. One of the things I would also think about is you got to think about, in the end, if you're going to win the hand, you have to have a hand point.
Yeah.
Right? and if you're... Before you start taking tiles willy-nilly, you got to think about what is your hand point going to be? Are you going
Absolutely.
For a middle hand, or are you going for? Are you just going for a value tiles hand? How is it that you're going to get that hand point into your hand? Because you've got to have at least one. It doesn't matter in the end how many lucky tiles you have if you still don't have that hand point, right?
Yeah, exactly. That's what I was saying. When you have those lucky tiles, you want to look for your hand point. So
right.
If you have value tiles or not, exactly. Yeah.
Okay. So first you're thinking when you want to steal tiles, do you have a reason for really trying to win that hand, or is it a hand that you could let go and you don't really need to win it that bad? Are you okay? So that is one reason to
You get the words out. Yeah. Sorry, my headphones aren't working, and
I'm a little confused about all the communication going on.
It's distracting Garth from the sentence.
Okay, so yes. Wow. Interesting stat. Oh, hey, now I think my headphones are working too.
Mine still are not.
Oh.
All right. Anyway.
Exciting, yes.
We're going to talk about when you want to call for tiles.
When you want to call for tiles. Getting back to the subject at hand, yes. Keep your – or you want to know exactly what hand point you're aiming for before you start calling for tiles. Another idea that you brought up once was whether or not it takes you any closer to finishing your hand.
Right.
Can you elaborate on that point?
Well, like if you have a pair, you know, somewhere.
Uh-huh.
And then even if you pull in that pair, you're not going to have a pair left in your hand.
Right.
So let's say, you know, you have like...
So say you only have one pair in your hand.
You only have one pair, and then you have a few like runs and there.
Yeah.
And then if you even, so even if you pull in, you're not going to have your pair.
Right.
And you need your pair to finish.
You lose your head.
Right.
So in the end, taking that pair or taking that triple doesn't move you any closer
to winning.
Exactly.
You're still going
to
be the same number away from tempi or ready. The same shanten. So that would be a good example. When you look at the hand, like you want to say, if I pull in this, is it going to get me one closer?
Mm-hmm.
And that's when it, you know, if it's a lucky tile, maybe it's different because it gives you an extra point. So you have to have, you know, there you have to have the reason.
There is a reason for stealing a lucky tile, even though it doesn't actually move you any closer to winning the hand.
Right.
And that is, I think, a very important point. Does it move you closer to winning the hand? And for that reason, I do not understand why any player ever cons or quads a hand that is, or does an open quad for a hand that was closed until that point.
Right.
And that's a question I actually posed in my blog that I wrote for Fight Club last month. I'm really interested to hear anybody's suggestion about why in the world you would ever do that, especially in a game where there's con lucky tiles are allowed, because not only does that mean there's another con lucky tile, but that means that anybody who still hasn't opened their hand can reach and get those hidden lucky tiles. So it's a big bonus for everybody but you. it's just I really want to know what people think the merit is of doing a con when an open con when your hand was still closed until that point. It just seems like a big minus all the way around.
The only way I can see is if you have a ready hand and you're concealed, but then it would bring up the why would you keep that? Why did you not reach in the first place?
Yeah.
If you were ready. And you're going to, you know, open up. You're going to tell everyone pretty much that you're ready. Because the only, you know, if you do that, then you might be able to win on your supplementary tile, and that gives you an extra point.
Right.
That, I don't know. Maybe if it's the lucky tile and you're ready.
Right.
That might make sense.
I guess so. Boy. Yeah, the situations where it can be valid seem extremely particular.
Yeah.
Extremely, you know, specific. The only one other situation that I could think of where you might consider it would be on the very last hand. Let's say, you know, you're 2,600. Let's say you're 2,300 points out of first place. So you're thinking, okay, you're not the dealer. You're thinking, okay, I need a 2,600 point hand to win this. And let's say you look at your hand and you have one lucky dragon and one value tiles thing. And then you think, you're thinking, oh man, but if I steal the value tiles and then I have this thing, it's only going to be 2,000 point hand. I don't have enough. If you realize before you're stealing tiles that you're going to have to steal tiles anyway, then you might as well. Let's say you already have the value tiles, completed in your hand. Then you might con there because it takes you right up to that 40 base or that yeah,
yeah 40, 40 base
40
points,
base points bracket. Then you're guaranteeing yourself a 2,600 point hand. and you've assured yourself the victory if you can actually finish the hand.
Right.
But man, that is a really, really specific situation.
That's,
you know?
That's true.
And I cannot, for the life of me, I cannot think, except like you said, you know, maybe if you're already finished and it's another lucky tile, so you're giving yourself another hand point.
You're also giving yourself the chance at drawing the winning tile on the supplementary tile.
Boy, and that's still
but
a
then
big
why
gamble.
Wouldn't you reach anyway?
Right. Why wouldn't you have reached? Because that's a sure hand point right there. And then you could also get concealed self-draw, too, yeah. You know, which is what you're hoping for. And then you could get that on every draw after you do reach, whereas when you do the con, you can only get it that one time.
Right.
So that's another one of those situations, a sort of specific situation where people call for steel tiles and call for steel tiles that I really have never understood. But, and like we're saying, it's unless you have a really, really compelling reason for it, there is just no reason to open your hand.
Yeah. Also, so another, moving on.
Okay.
About the, is that okay?
Yeah.
Moving on about when to steal tiles or the plan for when you're calling tiles from other players, you want to think about your final weight. You know, a lot of times you see people, they will chow on an open-ended weight and be left with a gut shot.
Right. And, you know, you can figure that the open-ended weight is probably, you'll probably have a few more chances with that.
Yeah.
And then if you take that one early, you're leaving yourself with the crappy weight.
Right.
And, you know, That's the one that you really wanted to steal if you had a chance.
Right, you're exposing your hand and then leaving yourself with few outs.
Right.
And if you have the chance to change to an open one ended, you know, later, if it's one right after the other, then it almost makes sense. Like if you chow the open ended and then you're ready, and you still have chances at changing to open ended later, that makes a little bit more sense. But usually even then you want to wait until the end of the hand.
Right.
Usually you want to. I mean, it's one of those things. I know a lot of people out there reading the Obaka Miko series. And that's one thing that they say in there. You know, leave the best for last. You want to leave leave the good part of your hand for last. Because when you're about to win, you want the most outs you can get.
Right. That's true. You don't want to be leaving yourself with the smallest chance of winning.
Right.
And especially if, let's say, you're only one away from ready. And, you know, let's say you're one away from ready with on like the fifth or sixth draw, and you have that you have one gut shot and you have an open-ended weight. Why would you take that open-ended weight so early when you can still maybe draw the closed weight first? You might still be able to draw the open-ended weight. Probably, I mean, if it's a good weight anyway, you can draw that one still, and then you can just be waiting concealed,
yeah,
right?
Without showing your hand.
And so, why would you kind of? It's kind of like shooting yourself in the foot.
Yeah.
You have a chance to make a big hand. You have a chance to do something big, and then instead you're saying, "No, I'm going to take the small thing, and I'm going to make it all so hard for myself." Too.
Right. And again, it goes back to the, now you're ready, so you're stuck. And if somebody else reaches or something, then you don't have a way out as well, and you don't have a good hand to fight with.
Right. You've committed yourself to a cheap hand.
Yeah.
Whereas, you know, in the other way, you can. You can get off the hand if you really want to, or you still have the option of, if you go for the hand, actually making a still fairly expensive hand.
Yeah. So I think that's a few good points there.
Yeah.
So we said...
First rule, yeah. If you can't think of a good reason for it, then keep it closed.
Yeah, just don't. Invincibility.
Yeah.
I've been having problems with similar sounding words lately. Invisibility is a huge defense, and you should definitely use that. And it can also be a great offense as well, because the more you show, the more other people are going to know what you have. So invisibility is huge in these drawing games.
Mm. Next point is, what hand point are you aiming for? Will you have a hand point after you start stealing tiles, or are you still going to need help somehow trying to create that hand point?
Mm-hmm. So you want to have a plan for that. And you want to have a plan for what you're going to end up waiting for.
Right. First of all, does it move you any closer to ready? And once you get to ready, will you have a good wait, or are you kind of committing yourself to a crappy chance of winning?
Right.
All right. Some good points, for sure. And that, I think, about wraps it up for this session of Garth and Jen's podcast.
We'll be back in a couple weeks after the next league tournament.
Oh, yeah.
We have more to report about.
We're going to be doing that before we head off to Germany, huh?
Yes.
All right.
That's the plan. So right. if we can schedule it, then we will be. We have some schedule issues lately with our... Because we're doing a lot of work with the World Word Series stuff. I know on the website, you know, it's hard to see all the work that we're doing, but there's a lot of stuff going on for World Series, and we're trying to get a lot more players chances to play Reach.
A lot of planning. And we're trying to get people to play Reach, and we're trying to get some people in Japan interested in the World Series tournament.
Yes. Oh, and we are still doing the meetups. This is something we forgot about in the news section. Real quick, we're doing the meetups. In the next podcast, I promise, we'll do a section on that and on all of our winners so far. You can come and play with us in the meetups. You just need to get a free ID on RonRon, which is JPML's official battle site. There's a tutorial at reach.mahjong.com on how to sign up, along with links to sign up there. And for the tournaments, you just need a free ID, and then we have a sign-up form every month. Every two weeks. We show it on the front page of the site, and there's a form you can go to and sign up. We usually have about eight people that sign up every time.
Right.
And we're having good, you know, we have three games, and then we have a final table.
And, you know, I have to say, I've seen some real improvement from the people that have been coming, regularly the last,
Absolutely.
Last 2 months.
Absolutely. But
especially, YY Trisil is Yoshi?
Is LOL.
LOL. Okay,
yeah.
LOL. On he's LOL
on Yakitori, yeah.
Okay. Some real improvement from especially him, but also the other players. And
yeah.
I think
Yoshi and Clacker have definitely improved a lot.
Right. So, you know, I mean, if you come and play against people, you get some ideas from other people on how to improve your game, because everybody has ideas on how to play.
Yeah.
And because we talk about the games.
We have the tournaments, and then on the off weeks, we have the tournaments every 2 weeks, and then on the off weeks, we have a session where we get in the chat room. And for that, you need a full membership on Rondon, which is $5 a month. But if you come in there, then we go over the final table and we talk about different ideas and different styles
on how people play and, you know, what could we have done differently in this situation, and I think it has really helped a lot of us, even me and Jen.
Absolutely.
It's always good to get other people's input.
And you can come watch the games even if you don't want to play with a free membership.
Yeah, absolutely.
So join us.
Yes, please join us at the meetups.
And join us next time.
Join us at the meetups and join us next time on reachmahjong.com's podcast. Thank you.
Thank you.